Can we take a moment of silence for gratitude for the AA recoveries of the past 75 years? Thank you. We have three speakers here today. The name of the meeting is There Is a Solution. These three speakers will each speak approximately 20 minutes each. We have Craig R. from California. David K. from Delaware. And Laura H. from Alaska. Are you ready, Craig? Craig R.
I'm Craig, and I'm an alcoholic. And it's funny how sometimes alcoholics, how we take things so literally. I got the letter that I was going to be speaking, and told a lot of my friends that, and they said, "That's great, break a leg." So here I am. The other funny thing is you definitely do things big in Texas. I was assigned a room 103. In California, this is not a room, this is a hall. I'm blown away by how many people. This is the largest group I've ever talked to. And I'll try to give you my best. But what I really want to do is I really want to give you part of me. The part of me that was given to me through Alcoholics Anonymous. And there is a solution. And thank God there is. You know, I often think about that. You know, I think about sometimes when Jesus turned water to wine. And I know God never made a mistake, but he might have thought maybe that was a mistake. But if it was a mistake, his amends to us is the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because he's given us a way out. And I never knew there was a way out. I only knew one thing, and that was drugs and alcohol. I started very young. My parents owned a beer bar. There was always booze around, and I was always curious. And I loved the feeling. And I loved how it made me feel part of. I always felt like I felt of this planet. I always never fit in, or I never belonged anywhere. And I always wanted to be somebody or something, and I could never get there. And so I settled. I settled for being a drunken drug addict. Low rider, 54 Chevy, 4 tortillas high. Bouncing down Van Nuys Boulevard thinking I was cool. And part of me, it was cool. But there was always a part of me that knew that I was going down the wrong path. But I didn't see no way out. And I just thought this was the way I was supposed to live. So I made the best of it. And I did pretty good at it for a while. You know, drugs and alcohol was always my best friend. And then it turned on me. You know, and I became a slave to that. So, but where it led me, it's not so much what all the little things that I did and throughout my drinking. It's what it took from me. It's what was left of me at 19 years old. At 19 years old, what was left of me was nothing. I had nothing. No education, police records, facing prison sentence. I didn't know how to care for anybody. I only knew how to take from people. And that was what's left of me. And I was at the age of 19. And that was my jumping off point. And that was in 1969, 41 years ago. And I've been sober that long, 41 years. So... Thank you. Thank you. You know, everybody that, I know everybody's going to relate to this, their moment of desperation. Because we get pushed, for me, and I always believe, God, the last speaker that spoke here when I was listening to him, he was always saying how God was roping him in. And I love that. Because see, I always, when I look back, I realize that God has always had his hand on me. And the worst things that happened to me were the best things that happened to me. And everybody used to say, all the guys I used to hang around with, they'd say, man, you're the most unluckiest guy in the world. You're always getting caught. You know, if there would be 10 of us run in different directions, then they would follow me. But that unluckiness was my luck. Because that's what brought me to this program at 19 years old. Because I was at the end. I couldn't go anywhere. I was sitting in a padded cell in Van Nuys jail, out of my ever-loving mind. And I thought I didn't know what I thought I was. But when I started to come down, I realized where I was. I had that cry of desperation. I was fear inside of me, and I'm just going, I can't believe. I mean, I'm on probation. I'm fighting one case, and now I get this, and I'm going, oh. And I cried out at that time. And I always made deals with God. You know, he's like Monty Hall. You know, let's make a deal. And it was like, if you get me out of this one, I'll do this and this and this. And it was always based on doing something good. And I can't do anything good. Let me just tell you this. I've always, all my life, I had the best intentions for everybody and everything around me. I never started out to do harm to people. It's just where drugs and alcohol took me. But I had always good intentions. And I still do today. And I realize that good intentions ain't enough for an alcoholic. Because I am powerless. See, I'm powerless definitely over alcohol. I understand that. And I understand that I need to find that strength to turn away the first drink from a power outside of myself. I get that. And I also realized that my last drink that got me to Alcoholics Anonymous wasn't it. It was my first drink that got me to Alcoholics Anonymous. And all I have to do is not take the first drink, and I'll be okay. But I don't know how not to take the first drink. You know, we say in Alcoholics Anonymous, don't drink no matter what. Well, I got to tell you, no matter what's come in my life, I've had tragedy. I lost my son when he was 16 years old. Those are things you drink over. And I didn't drink. And it wasn't because of no matter what. It was because I didn't drink and I said a little prayer. And that's how simple it is for me. Because I know that inside of me, I cannot muster up anything that's going to keep me from that first drink. And all the disgusting things that I did, and all the things you'd think, any one of us, you know your stories, you think of all the crap you've done, you think that'd be enough to stop you. You think, my God, I can't do this to my children anymore, I can't do this to my family anymore. And we drink. When we remember the good times. How did I forget all the bad times and only remember the good times? And then after that, I go, why did I do this again? I'll tell you why. For me, I need a power greater than myself. Because if I stack up anything I have here, you can stack up your family, loved ones, money, property, prestige, and put a drink here. And they say, make your choice. And why do I pick up this and leave that? Because I'm an alcoholic. Because I'm defenseless against the first drink. And that's what brings me to there's a solution. Because I needed something. I needed a way out. And when Alcoholics Anonymous was presented to me, I saw the way out. I thank God for that, because I was 19 years old. My first meeting I went to was the young person's meeting, and the next youngest person was 30 years old, 1969. I'm going to say this real quick because I don't want to run out of time. When I was in that jail, they let me out on mistake bail. And I ended up in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, and then they took me back to jail. That one meeting changed my life. That one meeting changed my thinking. I was touched. What they call the flimsy reed in Alcoholics Anonymous. See, it didn't seem like it would do anything. But I'm desperate, like desperate man drowning. We reach for the flimsy reed, which turned out to be the loving and powerful hand of God. See, I didn't see that when I saw this. I just seen a bunch of weird ass stuff. Think about it. Come on, think about it. Here I am, a blah, 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 blah. There's nothing I'm going to say here that's going to get anybody sober. Come on. It's you and you and you when you touch that other person's hand next to you and you say, hey, come with me. Hey, give me your phone number. Here's my phone number. Call me at 2:00 in the morning when you need to drink. That's what gets us sober, not the podium. There wasn't a lot of podiums when I first got sober. There wasn't a lot of meetings either. And there certainly wasn't a meeting this big anywhere. I'm sure there was, but I never went to one. But God bless you all for being of service, for being willing to help another human being. And see, this is what the attitude, this is what was going on in Alcoholics Anonymous when I came there. Because because everybody else, every time I tried to do something, they was always telling me, da, 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 da. And I felt less than and they were holier than thou. Well, Alcoholics Anonymous didn't have that attitude. They listened to my bull crap. They'd pat me on the head and they'd go, that son, keep coming back. I was telling people how you do it. 2 weeks, you know. And they accepted me. I never was accepted anywhere. And they accepted my ideas and my things and they listened to me. And they didn't, it's like you say, we had no axe to grind. I had no dues to pay, sorry.
I didn't take that off the recording, please.
I had none of the, you know, and that's the atmosphere of Alcoholics Anonymous that makes it so conducive to us, rebellious imbeciles. So I didn't know what the solution was. All I knew is, you know, go to meetings, hang out with these people. But there is a solution. I wasn't ready for that solution because it said that I had to take a look at myself. I had to confess my shortcomings. I had to take a look at a power greater than myself. I had to make amends to things I've done wrong. I ain't ready for that solution. Okay, it's all right. It took me a long time to get to where I am today. But today I know that I am on the path that was put down by Bill and Bob and those first 100 people. I am on that path. I see the program clearly. I see the simplicity of it. The cornerstone of our arch that we are building to freedom is based on simplicity. And I always want to complicate everything. I want to make it so difficult I don't have to do it. If it's simple, why aren't I doing it? One of the things, and there is a solution, one of my favorite lines in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, is that my life, my very life, depends. Absolutely depends on the constant thought of others. Now I'm going to finish that line, but first I'm going to say this. I never had a problem having constant thought of others. You bastards, that, bop, bop, bop. Why you do, bop? I was always thinking of everybody and how I was going to get even. I got that. But the line goes on to say and how I can meet their needs. Oh my God. And let me tell you something. It took me many, many years to learn how to think of someone else's needs besides my own. Because me and my own petty little problems were so monumental. And I look back at him today and I go, what a fool I was. So I was facing jail time. I was doing, you know, all this stuff. Let me tell you a real quick thing about the jail time. Alcoholics Anonymous somehow accepted me and somehow stood up for me in that courtroom in front of that judge. And that judge was impressed not by me, but by the people that stood up next to me. and he gave me a chance. Thank you for that, Alcoholics Anonymous, for that chance, because my life today, I can't even describe it. I have friends here. I have a beautiful girlfriend sitting over there, and I got friends on this row that came to be with me. And I'm meeting people, and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous is the most beautiful thing in the world. This is the vision for us, the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's what Bill and Bob conceived of what we have right here. Wow, someday maybe this would happen. And another thing, someday maybe I wouldn't have to go as far as they did. Because see, I got sober at 19. And because of the identification process, and because that first speaker I heard told my story, and I said, how in the hell is he reading my mail? And then I saw a loser that became a winner. And I wanted what you had. And I became willing. I'm willing to do anything. No. You know, some people go, oh, you're willing to go to any lengths. You're coming up here on the crutches. Let me just tell you this, for me, willing to go to any lengths is not walking to the 10 miles to a meeting and through the snow uphill both ways, cutting your hair, putting on a suit, any of that stuff. Because they'd always say, well, if you do this to go get a drink or whatever. But Bob said this. He says, if we put just half the zeal that we put into our drinking, we will be successful on this program. And for me today, the willing to go to any lengths is willing to take a look at myself, willing to admit when I'm wrong, willing to make an inventory, willing to see how I am wrong, how I think that the whole world should revolve around me, and become willing to get rid of me, and become willing to get rid of self, and become willing to help other people, and to have thoughts of other people and how I can meet their needs. This is where I found the peace in Alcoholics Anonymous. I believe that's the peace they're talking about in the promises. Because everything in the book, if you just look at the book, it's just littered with two concepts, God and others. God and others. It's all about others. And I had learned to stop thinking about myself all the time and for a moment think about someone else and how I can meet their needs. And you know what? Sometimes they never get sober. Most of the times they don't get sober. But I know that some of those people have come back to me and go, you know, I never forgot that day you helped me. I'll never forget that day that you took me from that place and you took me home. Yeah, I went back out, but he's sober today. This is the thing what I have, and I have this. We have lifelong friends ahead of me and below me in sobriety, people that have helped me and people that I have helped. That's what I love. So the solution, a spiritual awakening is the conqueror of my illness. That's what I need. And believe me, I'll tell you something. The first 100 people that wrote that did not necessarily want to write that because they didn't, everybody, you know what? I think I would rather drink than go be that godly type of person. But it's not that type of godly type of person we're talking about. It's just the willingness to have a relationship with God, with a power greater than ourselves. A relationship. And how does it start? It starts by asking. It starts by willingness. And that was the key in Bill's life. He became willing. So, today, for 41 years, I look back and I go, you know what? I still haven't forgot. I still can remember the last time I drank. I haven't forgot that. But I don't think about drinking ever anymore. It doesn't even enter my psyche. When things go bad and all that stuff, I don't go, oh, man. Oh, God. It gets better. The path is you trudge it. That's all I can say. But for me, I've went down so many different avenues in Alcoholics Anonymous, trying this, trying that, trying that. It took me so long to just get down to the little basic, simple things in the book of Alcoholics Anonymous that showed me my way out, that taught me how to be free from myself. And that's, for me, what freedom is all about. Because when I think about being free from the change of alcohol, you know, I'm just going to tell this real quick story and then I'm going to wrap this up. This guy had a bear for 15 years on a chain, and he could only go 15 feet in a circle. And when the man died, they came, and the bear was there, and they decided to take that bear and let him off and let him into the woods and have his freedom. And when they left the bear, all he did was walk in a 15-foot circle. And there was his freedom at all this thing, and he couldn't take it. I've been freed, and this is the only gift I have. The change of alcoholism has been broken in my life. But I don't want to just keep walking in a 15-foot circle. I want to change my life. I want to have more than just sobriety. I want to have the life that Alcoholics Anonymous promised to me. And I found that life in the simple steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I'm going to say this, and this is a little thing that I think about sometimes, and it's not mine, but I think about it. When things get going bad for me, and I start looking at life from a funny direction, and I start thinking that I'm owed something, and you know things get testy, I got to remember that is my timer to say to shut up. So I'm going to shut up. I'm going to finish this right now. But I got to remember that takers are losers. And I should know because I was a taker for most of my life. And I got to remember that day, 41 years ago, when I came to in that padded cell in Van Nuys, with fear that was gripping my soul, that I was afraid that I wasn't going to live to see another day. And I got to remember that on that day that God answered my cry of despair. And I got to remember that I've been walking on the sunny side of the street for 41 years. And I got to remember that most people won't see our side of the street 41 days, let alone 41 years. And most of all, I got to remember, but for the grace of God, there go I. Thank you.
Thank you, Craig. And next we have David from Delaware.
Good afternoon. My name is Dave, and I'm an alcoholic. I'm sober by the grace of God and the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There's no doubt in my mind about that, because I couldn't stop drinking on my own. When I think about there is a solution, first of all, there is a solution. Like, I think because I'm real nervous that I'm, like, extremely thirsty right now. And I do not want to drink. I don't want to drink. It's been removed from my higher power. And that's just, that's awesome. That's really awesome. And in that chapter, there is a solution. It talks about a design for living. So I use this program for everything. And that's awesome. It's awesome that I could use the program to help with anything. Like, God puts things in my... God doesn't put things in... Things happen in my life, and I use my higher power to get through it. Like, to get through this. Because I'm still selfish and self-centered, so this isn't, you know, really where I would choose to be. But this is where I'm supposed to be. And so I used God... You know, I've been praying all morning. I've been praying, you know, for the last few days specifically about helping me to go through this. You know, when I do my third step, I don't say take away my difficulties. I ask him to help me to go through it, you know, because when I was drinking and drugging, I was trying to go around stuff and trying to get, you know, escape. So I don't want my higher power to remove these feelings. I want him to help me to go through it. And he does. If I pause every now and then, it's because I'm praying, because I didn't prepare. I didn't feel like that was what I needed to do. You know, I really tried not to think about what I was going to say. And I've had a lot of advice and suggestions from people. And the best one was this morning I got a text and it said, you know, be honored that you're a vessel and don't think. All right, God, help me not to think because I can't do that either. I was telling my friends just, and I have friends. That's awesome. That's the fellowship part. You know, I have a lot, all of you are my friends. And it's beautiful. And it is like my friend that tied my tie or ironed my clothes, you know, or, you know, gave me a hug or just gave me words of encouragement. So I don't have to do this alone. And like I said, all of you are my friends. Like, I met somebody just before I got dressed to come here, and I was like crying because I was so emotional. Like, gratitude and fear and excitement. And I normally don't shed tears, but I was. And you know, when you pass somebody and they say, how are you? And you say, I'm fine. But in AA, I don't do that. If somebody says, how are you? I told her, and I never met her before. I said, I'm that, you know, sort of, and she understood what that meant. And she helped me. She helped me she just helped me. And, when I first ever opened the big book to actually read what it said in there, it was my first detox, and I opened it up, and you would think that I would read something like "There is a solution," you know, because that sounds like hope. And I remember this. I don't know why, but I read to the employers. And that's not at the beginning. So I don't know why. I was unemployed, and I didn't employ anyone. So I was like. But the guy talks about, you know, the jumping off place, about suicide and stuff in that chapter. Maybe that's what I needed to read. But I didn't read There is a Solution. And the whole thing was just, none of it made sense. So There is a Solution. That statement is hope, you know. And I have heard that they wanted to name the big book A Way Out, or There is a Way Out. And that's along the same lines, and it's hope. And there is some hope in that statement, but when I remember reading this chapter slowly and feeling hopeless because it talked about, you know, being without defense against the first drink. And I remember reading that about, you know, that we are without defense against the first drink. And then later on in like the next chapter, it says once more, you know, that it's got, that defense has to come from a higher power. So those statements were not hope to me. They made me feel hopeless. And so I had to be hopeless to get to where I am now. And so that hopelessness was good. It didn't feel good at the moment, but it was good to feel that hopeless. I remember thinking, reading that and saying, I'm screwed. I was going to drink again. That statement said, you are going to drink again, because I didn't have a higher power. I didn't believe, I was willing to believe in a higher power. I didn't believe that higher power would help me to not drink, you know. And that was a legitimate way to think, because I didn't have that experience that, you know, a higher power hadn't never helped me before. When I wanted to drink, I drank. And so when I read it, I knew that I was without defense against the first drink. So it really made me hopeless to read that. And that was necessary. Just like the pain that I went through to come back to AA was necessary. And it's awesome to be here at this convention. This is my first convention ever, you know, international or state. And I got here Wednesday and there was a lot less people, and you could see more and more people. And I've looked around and I'm like, wow, everybody has gone through everything they had to get through to be right here at this moment. Like, and that's awesome. Like, everybody has stories just like mine. And there was, and pain's a touchstone. You know, pain was what got me, you know, here. We were part of what got me here, just like the hopelessness. And I look around and I say, wow, everybody has that. Everybody has that pain that was actually not a bad thing, but a good thing, like Carl was saying. So that was necessary. And that helps me now for like a design for living. Like, I can look at things. When I was flying down here, I was having some anxiety. And I have comfort knowing that when I'm uncomfortable or going through something that I feel is painful, that it's actually a good thing, that there is no bad things. They're all good, you know. Feeling good is what I like. That's what I chased, and that's what I get in sobriety. But also, having that pain is not a bad thing. Being uncomfortable is not a bad thing. When I was crying an hour ago, I knew that it was a good thing. It was a good thing to feel that, you know, and to go through it sober. That's a gift. I always try to go around or drink things away or run away. I am originally from New Jersey. I ran away to Texas when I was 17 because I was running away. I didn't like New Jersey. And I remember crossing that bridge and saying, I'm never going back there again. And I came here because I got served alcohol. And the pot was cheap, and there were some pretty women. That's why I moved all the way across the country. And that's when my drinking started becoming daily. You know, was when I was able to get served. And somebody asked me on the plane, you know, what is the solution? And that's what sparked the anxiety, because I don't know. See, Dave, I said it. I don't know. But I know what works for me, you know. And this works, you know. And the sponsor I had before, the one I have now, he said that be pragmatic. And I didn't know. A lot of the words he threw at me, I didn't know what they meant. But so he thumbs it up for me. If it works, do it, and if it doesn't, then don't. And I know what doesn't work. I know if I don't pick up a phone and ask for help, that doesn't work. And so today, I picked up the phone, and I asked for help. I just wanted to, I'm maybe jumping around. My home group, and I was going to say this in the beginning, but I was a little nervous, is the Spirit of Truth group in Newark, Delaware. And if you're ever in Delaware, come and see us. It's an awesome home group. And I look around and I see a lot of people that I know from Delaware, and Tyler from Texas. And I'm going to pray again. Hold on. And I was, you know, one of the suggestions was maybe take some notes, and I didn't feel, that made me anxious that I had to do that. So I just realized that I was just going to use this big book as like notes to just look through, and if I got to a stumbling point, then I could just look at this and say, okay, that'll keep me going. And therefore, the main problem of the alcoholic centers in his mind rather than in his body. And that's so true, you know. My stinking thinking. I'm very grateful and gratitude's an action word. And they told me I just had to suit up and show up. So the solution for me is, there's so many little things that I learned along the way. You know, of course the steps are the solution. The big book and what's the directions that are in here that I get from here and from my sponsor and from my network of friends, that's part of the solution. But at first I did not have a solution. I just prayed and I went to a meeting. And that was my whole program, was that I prayed and went to a meeting. And that's the grace of God. That's the grace of God that kept me sober from day one. And then I picked up something else along the way. Like, they would give me a phone list. And in the past, I wasn't willing to use the phone list. But they kept giving them to me. And I had all these phone lists. So it was uncomfortable to call someone. I would look on the list. Somebody had actually wrote the name of the group on top of the list. And I thought that was great because I could say, all right, I remember going to that group. And I remember that guy. So once I pictured the guy, then I called him, because then it wasn't so much like calling a complete stranger. And I dialed the number and I prayed for the willingness as I hit send, and I started using the phone. So then I had that, you know, as a program. And this was, you know, before I did a four-step or anything, of course, this was my program. So I called somebody. And then I started, people gave me rides when I came back into the rooms, and I started giving people rides, you know, and that got me out of myself, like being of service. And those were the simple things that I could do. I could not let go and let God. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to surrender. I didn't know how to do inventories or steps or anything. I knew how to pick up the phone and say, do you want to go to a meeting? I knew how to get on my knees and pray. I could do those things. I didn't know how to do things that I learned later on. So over the last couple of years, I've just picked up more tools along the way. And probably the most profound ones were, you know, like doing inventory on myself and looking at myself. And those were the steps that changed me to a person who can be thirsty and nervous and anxious and afraid and not have to take a drink and not even want to drink. And so I've changed. I'm not, you know, like it talks about it. In this chapter, it talks, you know, it refers you to the spiritual experience appendix at the back. And I have changed. I'm not the same person. And that's why I don't want to drink today, because I'm not the same person. And that was through the steps. And my spirit is awake, you know. And people that know me, you know, can feel it, and that's awesome. Like, and I feel it too. Like, it's just, and I can see it in other people. I can see it in other people in their eyes when they're new or when they've worked some steps and changed. Like, you just, your spirit is awake and it's in your eyes. So, I'm not really sure. I think I'm supposed to probably be quiet and not make things up to say. Thank you all for laughing with me. And I want to thank my friends and God, because it's important for me to, you know, I've been praying all morning and asking my friends all morning for help. And just like, you know, that's what they taught me, you know, pray for help and say thank you. So thank you, friends.
When I got the list of the speakers, and I realized that Dave was from Delaware, I wasn't really sure how he was going to handle this many people. Are there this many people in Delaware? You did great, Dave. Thank you so much. Our next speaker is Laura from Alaska.
Okay. I got Kleenex. I have a watch, water. My name is Laura. I'm an alcoholic. My home group is the Nanilchik group in Nanilchik, Alaska. My sobriety date is January 15th, 1995. And there's usually seven people at my home group. But because of that, we are allowed to talk for 20 minutes just to fill up the space. I should have this down, but I don't. And in Alaska, we don't sweat sitting down or talking. And I am just so nervous. Thank you to all of my friends, both old and new. I love you. And thank you to the Pacific region for allowing me to serve in the hospitality suite earlier. I got more hugs than I would have if I hadn't done that. And also for the Pacific region, we have this great thing called the Pacific Region Alcoholics Anonymous Service Assembly in March, where we get to leave the cold and the snow. And next year we get to go to Hawaii. But where you learn to coexist with this many people for 3 days. Not this many people, but this many people. I can do this. All right, so there is a solution. And, you know, I was so nervous about this being asked to participate, although what an honor and a blessing to share with this wonderful panel and our great chair, and it's just really cool, but it's really scary. But it's not that scary. My husband goes, Laura, there's a chapter on this. Read the book, you know. But there is a solution. Is something I always thought I had. Before I got here, I thought I had all the answers. I went through life knowing I needed the answers because I was a loner. You didn't really hardly look at me, but you had done me wrong. And that's how I went through life. I figured, you know, when I got here and I did, you know, my first fourth step, and I'm trying to figure out why and how and all that kind of stuff, and I thought, oh yeah, I was left at a gas station when my family was traveling one time, and that's why I turned out this way, you know. And that doesn't have anything to do with it, really. My parents are not alcoholic. I have a large family, and we love each other. We've gone through periods where we didn't like each other very much, but we love each other. And that's what I grew up in. But I was always just a little too far away from the mic. And I was just away from things. But I believe I put myself there. So, and when I got older and I found alcohol, I found it at 15. I didn't even like it. My boyfriend turned me on to beer and pot, and I didn't like that either. But it was a solution for me to get out of me, to not be that shy, quiet girl, to be with the party animals where I could be liked and, you know, participate. But really, some of the things I was liked for were things that I don't remember. So that's probably a real good thing. So my solution was in drinking. I knew a long time ago that I was an alcoholic. I was okay with that. Being an alcoholic gave me the reasons and, for, you know, having fun. It gave me the excuses for having the black eyes that I had not through falling down in the curb, which I did several times, but from being in the kind of relationships that I found myself in because, you know what, I just wasn't worthy of a real honest love. And I know I received a lot of real honest love, my parents, my family. I know I had friends when I was younger that I had some solid stuff with, but real honest love, I didn't know anything about that until I got here. Honest, we love you till you can love yourself. I didn't know anything about that. But I was all about making me look better and you look lousy so that I could lift up my self-esteem. And that's not the right way to go about that. So anyway, I was way okay with being an alcoholic. My first DUI was at a Japanese restaurant. And, you know, sake might come in a little bottle like this. But I went back the next day after I got out of jail. And I don't really know if it was this big, but it seemed that big. And I knew it had to have been that big to get me that loaded. So, and the bad part about that DUI was my roommate, a drunk, wasn't home. I couldn't get him to come pick me up. So I had to call my brother in the morning. Well, we don't do that sort of thing. But my brother came and picked me up. And gosh, that might be why I had a really weird relationship with him for a long time. It's hard to let people see a part of me that I was in acceptance of, but I was ashamed of. So anyway, that was my first DUI. I followed it up shortly thereafter with the second DUI where I wasn't really drunk, but the cops determined I should go to jail. And so I did that. And again, the whole time, there's a hole. I know there's a hole. I have no idea what to put in there. So I just drank, and forgot everything. Blackout from the get-go. Drove a lot. And okay, I might as well just say it because I've been saying it in my stories in Alaska, but I drank a lot in Texas where it was okay to drink and drive. And I don't know that really it is, but I know my first pickup, I lived in Austin, and I bought a pickup from the beer guy, and his roommate taught me how to drink a beer, toss it in the back. Drink a beer, toss it in the back. So I was very good at that and kept my possessions light during those days because the back filled up with beer cans. I wasn't a very happy person. And I had an awful lot of amends to make. And here I am. Okay, so if I owe you an amends to anybody in Texas, line up somewhere. Because I know I owe them. But I also know today that for those that I don't remember what you look like or don't remember the circumstances, I can make living amends today. And I can make living amends to the people in my life today. I can make living amends to the people that I come in contact with. And that's what this program has taught me. I had two DUIs. You'd think that would be a bad year. I had worse. But one year, I hit a dog on the freeway. I feel bad about that. And I'm not sure what happened. And then I hit a motorcycle. But he was drunk. I had, you know, alcohol in the car. So we pulled off on the side of the street, determined what our situation was, and said, I'm good. And then I hit a bridge. And that was more serious. Hit the bridge, ended up in a hospital. And, you know, my sister who lived nearby, again, you know, call a family member. And she came over in the middle of the night after I'd hit the bridge. And the cop said, we didn't charge her with anything, although she's really insanely intoxicated. But she's okay. Because, you know, when you drink that much, you're kind of like jelly. You hit a bridge. You just, you know, do one of these things. I thought it was so cool that I got to be life flighted to the hospital. And But all the stuff that you go through then is not so cool. But my whole my mom and dad were on vacation at the time. Guess what? Laura, I don't know that they told them I was drinking and driving, but Laura hit a bridge. She's in the hospital. She broke a few things. And so they raced down. My brothers, my sisters raced over, just surrounded with love. Didn't know how to do that. But I did cop another resentment at that time because my car was in really bad shape. My folks went to go get it out of impound and came back to the hospital and said, "Hey, we found this bottle of wine in the back seat. Is it okay if we take it to the hotel?" And I'm like, "That bottle of wine could have killed me, you know? So what are you doing drinking my killer bottle of wine?" And so there was an amends that I got to make. My folks don't understand this disease. But I remember talking to my mom last year, and she said, "I remember when you said, I think I have a problem with this, and I think I need to cut back." And she goes, "I had no idea." And she goes, "But you're obviously very happy." And I'm very happy. And I'm sober today. And I'm standing in front of like a million people. But it's good. So that year, after I got out of the hospital, I didn't drink for a while. They said, "You're not supposed to take Vicodin and drink." And, right, I know this guy's nodding his head. And I'm like, "Yeah, see?" And so I didn't. I didn't for about a week, but then you can, and I did, and so that wasn't the end of my drinking. You know, I forgot to say, I did go to AA meetings after my DUIs, but I put on the blinders, I sat in the back row, I came in late, I left early. And I could not deal with the happy that I saw. But the worst thing about, it's just one of those things I'm real proud about. In my wheelchair, after I got out of the hospital, I would wheel down to the corner store, 12-pack on my lap, 12-pack on my footrest, wheel back home uphill, and I'd be good. I'd be good. So 6 years, it took me 6 years after I had this up close personal experience with death before I had the hole that was getting so large that it was collapsing the rest of my body. It had collapsed my heart. It had collapsed my mind. I couldn't do it anymore. And, I'm not sure where the Eskimo story comes from. I know I've been told. But so I had a roommate at the time that I got sober. And I lived in San Jose. He commuted from Sacramento, so he was only there Monday through Friday. Well, I traveled Monday through Friday, and I came home on the weekend, so it was perfect. But I came home on a Thursday, and I didn't want him to see me drunk. So I checked into a hotel down the road and had my last several drinks. And when I came home on Sunday and I just couldn't, no, Saturday night, and I just couldn't do it anymore, it wasn't working for me, I came home and said, "God, I can't do this. I don't want to live like this anymore." And he said, "Laura, you don't have to." And I went to sleep, and I woke up the next day, went to my neighbor, went, "Oh, my God, I'm an alcoholic, and I need to do this, and I need to do that." I had to go fix my glasses because I'd slept on them. And I said, "Will you go to a meeting with me?" "No, I'm not an alcoholic." "Will you call them for me?" "No, I'm not the alcoholic." So I called AA and went to my first meeting in California. You guys said that you were going to love me till I could love myself. You did. You gave me grief because I hung out on a pink cloud for a long time. But because I hung out with you, I didn't drink today or the other day. because you told me to get a book, get a sponsor, go to meetings, do the steps. I didn't drink that day. You then told me that this was about giving it back. You told me it was about being in service. Well, one of the rules was you couldn't chair a meeting until you were 6 months sober. Well, and then my sponsor made me take one at 5. So that was a resentment, but I did the meeting. My sponsor also told me that I had to secretary a women's meeting. And I secretaried a women's meeting and became friends with the women in the program again. I couldn't lie to women. I mean, women, we know how we do things. And men, you could snow a man. And that was one of my solutions. Snow them. Just, you know, lie and get what you want. And I just couldn't do that anymore. And I don't know what time I started, but so I'm sober anyway. And thank God I got to that. When I was in California, I had the mistaken impression that there were a billion people in California that could do service work, so I'm too busy. I did, however, work diverter and got to answer phone calls from drunks in the middle of the night. I did get to secretary meetings, but the geek in the back of my home group that was always giving those darn general service announcements was, he was good at that, and that was his job, and I'm too busy. So, I'm going through AA life one day at a time, start to work up in Anchorage with my job, and have a girlfriend up there who introduced me to my husband now, who's born and bred in Alaska. And when we got married, I was the GSR the day I got there. Of his home group. I guess I decided it was my home group. But in Alaska, there's just not as many of us. And, you know, to participate, you need to participate fully. And I was GSR. It was really horrible because my husband was a GSR before me, and he's, like, totally into traditions, which I'm getting there. And but I don't like being told. I don't like being told anything. But I got to learn those lessons, and I got to be GSR, and I got to walk through that. And like you said, you know, it's walk through it. That, you know, I'm sober today, and I have gotten through a lot of things. I've gotten through the happy moments. I've gotten through sad moments. I've gotten through them on the phone with my sponsor. I've gotten through them side by side with you because you told me how to do this. You know, read the book, get a sponsor, go to meetings, be of service to someone else, and get yourself out of your head. And as soon as I think that my life is hard, then I'll talk to you, and you're having a bad day. And I'm like, oh, thank God. That's not that's not me. So, but really, it works. And I get to do so many things. I do believe that my higher power doesn't set me up in a bad way, but he personalized God, and I'm so glad because every day I get to say hi to Dad. No, not. I get to say hi to my father, and I get to say hi to my pop, who's up there, and I know they're just hanging out playing. Not God's probably busier than that, but up there with full hearts. And my dad used to play tricks on us too. So I know that he just wants the best for me, and he wants me to be of service to my fellow man, and he keeps showing me lessons until I figure it out. And I know that today. It's not you getting me. It's not me being stupid. It's me getting to learn again. And learning is good. I know that I learn a lot when I write. I don't like to write, but you know, I have a God box at home, and I have no idea what's in there. And I'm afraid that if I were to clean it out, then I'd be too curious to go in and see what's there. But I know that what's in there isn't in here. And that's like good. It's very good. I need to think about you. I need to just get out of me and get to do something else. I'm also, well, I'm not real busy right now, but I was still very busy, and I got to be of service. I got to be GSR for my home group. I got to go to area and work on different committees. I didn't know I could do CPC, and you taught me how to do that. I thought literature committee was going to be boring, and not. So you get to learn all that. And then the year that I decided to take off, the chair called me up and said, Laura, we really need somebody to be archives chair. And I'm like, archives? And archives, there's so many archives people in here. There's just history everywhere. We are our history, and if we don't remember where we came from, we're going to make the same mistakes. And I like the easier, softer way. Most days I listen to you, and I learn from your experience. And so that's all good. Archives. And then last summer I lost my job. And so that's, oh, that's too bad. It was a real example of God doing for me what I could not do for myself. And the first thing that crossed my mind was, oh my gosh, I get to go to more meetings. Oh my gosh, I get to be of service. I get to get new sponsees instead of, you know, okay, I know you're good. So if I leave town for a couple weeks, you're good, right? And I get to be of service. And the one other woman in my home group was really grateful I was going to take on new sponsees. And then last summer, I got to pick berries all year. And my husband thinks I need a 12-step program for berry picking. And I planted a garden. And there's just so much more to life. And AA is a foundation for that, for me, for all of us here, or we wouldn't be here. And just one of the things that, you know, God put in my life yesterday, this is a very large group of people in one city who are all wearing green lanyards. And the people I was hanging with yesterday, you know, peeled off. I'm not sure where they were. And there was a moment of not sure where to go or what to do. And so I just walked into the next hospitality suite. And I was in the Loners International meeting hospitality suite. And there was a lady telling me all about this and what you get to do and how important this is to another alcoholic. And would you write a letter to somebody? And so go there. It's like way cool. They give you the paper and the pencil or pen. And I got to write, which is what my sponsor told me to do. And all of a sudden it's like, okay, thank you. Thank you, God. I wasn't sure where I was supposed to be. And this is where I'm supposed to be. This is where I'm supposed to be today. They're just gifts, just coming out of every cell of every body. And there's, and when I be quiet, when I'm quiet for just a second, I feel it. I was so overwhelmed in being here, and everybody's talking about these coincigods, and they started on the plane. And then, you know, my sponsor buzzed yesterday with excitement. And you can't help but be in a room with other alcoholics and feel that. And all these coincigods that are happening here. And as I'm writing this letter to, I'm not sure who, I just remembered, these happen all the time. You know, these happen every day. Every week, every month that I've been in here, I can remember what they are. And for that, I'm very, very grateful. Thank you very much for being here. And that's all I got.
like to again thank all of you. Thank you very much. It was a great meeting. They told me we had this room until 2:30, and if there was time, I could share for about 5 minutes. Well, actually, they asked me to share for about 5 minutes. The tapes run 90 minutes, so it's going to be a short tape if you go buy it. Again, my name is Wendy Sue, and I am an alcoholic. In the second chapter of the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, it says, there is a solution. Almost none of us like the self-searching, the leveling of our pride, the confession of shortcomings which the process requires for its successful consummation. But we saw that it really worked in others, and we had come to believe in the hopelessness and futility of life as we had been living it. When, therefore, we were approached by those in whom the problem had been solved, there was nothing left for us but to pick up the simple kit of spiritual tools laid at our feet. We have found much of heaven, and we have been rocketed into a fourth dimension of existence of which we had not even dreamed. If you're new or nearly new, there is a solution. Please come back. We'll close with the Lord's Prayer.